Morning, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning, in which we're going to try to talk about, in a mature way, politics and things called elections. As you might have noticed, there's an election going on. And many people are obsessed by it. And many people in our own community tell me how addictive they become to the everyday ups and downs, backs and forth of this election time. At the same time, in our community, once a month, we've begun this kind of presenting a panel once a month on the five mindfulness trainings, which are sort of the right action, ethics, morals of the Buddhist teaching and Thich Nhat Hanh's Plum Village community. Not an easy subject to approach for obvious reasons. So many people have their minds made up. There's such powerful forces in our communication, media, to keep us focused, overwhelmed, daily, hourly, with this important information that we all need to know. It's not easy to come out of that. But I think for people who say they're following, quote unquote, a spiritual path, want to lead a spiritual life, want to create a better world, it behooves us to be able to step outside and to see the bigger picture. See, if you listen to the news every day, there's no big picture. It's all sound bites. It's all the issue, the drama of the day, who said what, who didn't say what. It's so easy to get lost in the minutia and not see the big picture. A dharma, Buddha dharma, is about big picture. What's this life about? Where am I going? It's the same way, you know, this is not a big deal. You know, same way in our individual life. We can lead our lives going from one day to the next, one crisis to the next, one experience to the next, always responding this way, that way, sometimes better, sometimes worse, without ever stopping and saying, what's going on here, right? You know, what am I doing with my life? Where's my life going? Do we have a bigger picture to relate to the everyday unfolding? It's like people in, I mean, we call it politics, you see. It sounds very big, but it's just like being in relationship, right? You're in relationship with somebody. You know, I have my needs, you have your needs. You know, every day it's a what? You know that one? My needs versus your needs, how do we work it out today? But does anybody have an idea of we, you see? How do we want the relationship to be, you see? How do I want to be in the relationship, which is a very different way of looking at it rather than what I want, what I need. You see, if there's no big picture of what the relationship is about and where we want it to go and how we want to be in it to get to that, cause and effect are one, then the relationship is always what? Struggle. Right? Conflict. And conflict resolution. And conflict. And conflict resolution. And conflict. And conflict resolution. You know, day after day, week after week, year after year. Yeah, and conflict resolution is better than war. But it's not a solution. I don't need to tell you, we live in, difficult times, big issues, big challenges. But there's a problem, you see. We're all in the same boat. It's like we started out on a boat, and there was a captain at the rudder, and it was supposed to take us from here to there, and everybody thought that's right. But somewhere along the way, we lost the captain, the motor died, and there's just a bunch of us, and we all have oars that we got to pull. See, we're all in the same boat. But the problem is, there's this group over here who says, what? I want to go there. There's another group over here who says, I want to go there. Right? And they're finding the people who agree with them, and they're not liking the people who disagree with them, and yet we're all in the same boat. And yet, what are we doing? We are fighting for who's got the rudder for these 4 years, or these 2 years, or this 1 year. Well, the other ones are over there, what? Strategizing how they can grab the rudder and take it, and then, And that, sadly enough, that is what's going on, and nobody's stopping to look at the big picture, to talk to the, nobody's acknowledging. It's like, my solution is to get those people out of the boat. Right? That's the answer. Get those people out of the boat, or at least neutralize them. Right? That's the solution. Of course, the other one side is saying the same thing. You can see where that goes. It goes nowhere, which is not true. It also creates great suffering. We just add to the suffering. So, what I suggest that we kind of think about this morning is, how do we step back from this fascination and obsession with what's being presented to us as the way forward, and really use our own critical thinking to look more deeply and more widely at what is going on? Right? Something nobody, if you watch the news and listen, nobody's asking us to do that, are they? We're just endlessly manipulated. And then we find out that the manipulations are all just manipulations. They're all spin. They're all sound bites. They're all, right? It's hypocrisy. So, this is what Dharma is about. This is what a spiritual path is about. That we wake up to directly ourselves through mindfulness, concentration, insight, through critical thinking, logical thinking. We learn to look deeply at reality within us and around us, so we can come to our own conclusions. Nobody wants us to do that, do they? They want us to come to their conclusions. Follow me. Even though it's heading toward the cliff. Right. Which leader do you want to follow toward the cliff? And depending on which side you are, some people think this one's going to take us over there first, but the other ones are going, so let us step back. Big picture. So I say the five mindfulness trainings. What are the five mindfulness trainings about? Do not kill. Do no harm. Protect all life. Do not steal. Do not take from others. Look at how what you're doing and whether in your life you are taking from others or the planet or other life, animal life, plant life. You know, about our body, about our consumption. What are we consuming? What are we putting into our bodies? What are we putting into our minds? Right speech. How do we talk with one another? Is it loving speech? Is it kind speech? Is it constructive speech? You know, or is it wrong speech? Wrong speech is speech that creates harm, that diminishes, that confuses, that covers over. Right? So, if we're back to the boat, the five mindfulness trainings give us a framework in how to go into life. When we say we go into life, that means how we go into relating to each other. You know, in the most intimate ways, within our families and our relationship, with our colleagues, with our neighbors, with society, with the world, with all of the groups, and, you know, how do we relate to that? Where am I coming from? You see, what kind of ground do I stand? And how? And those five mindfulness trainings, Thich Nhat Hanh's book on the five mindfulness trainings, my mindfulness training, he calls it For a Future to be Possible. Very powerful. Okay. Now, it obviously, you know, a future is possible. But obviously he means for a good future to be possible. Right? I mean, there'll always be a future. But what kind of future do we want? And he posits the five mindfulness trainings as giving humanity, all humanity. You don't have to be a Buddhist, a non-Buddhist, an atheist, you know, Christian, you can be Muslim, you can be whatever you want. These are just fundamental ways that we approach how we relate to one another. Why do we do that? One, it feels good. It's a much better way to relate, right? Than always relating through not caring if I'm doing harm. To myself, to others, to the planet, to animals, to, you know, to our resources, to whatever. It feels better to live in that careful way, that caring way, that wise, intelligent way, that kind, loving way. It feels good. But it also, you know, puts a kind of energy into the world and into relationships that is not creating more toxicity. Right? And if you listen to the dialogue of what's going on today, it is what? Toxic. On all sides, it's toxic. And toxicity only does what? Nurture more toxicity. So living from an ethical, moral basis in life and making this the operating way we act with our body and our speech and our actions makes a future of meaning and goodness possible for us and the world. And it does not matter how the world responds to us. In Buddhism, we say, give up all attachment to outcome. We practice goodness for the sake of goodness. One, because that's the way each of us as individuals want to be, but also because that's what we know. That's what, in the simplicity of our actions, of body, speech, and mind, this is what we want to offer the world. Right? An alternative to the non-five mindfulness trainings, where people do harm, and don't even know it and don't even care. People just take as much as they can for themselves and don't think about others and don't think about the future. Future generations, the future of our planet. People with their bodies just indulge and act out and take advantage of other people's bodies. Right? People just say things. Anything comes into their mind, say it. Without really aware of the effects of words. It's very powerful, right? Consumption patterns. If I'm consuming this, what is it doing to the planet? What's it doing to the culture? What's it doing to society? So the five mindfulness trainings are the beginning for each of us of having a very personal way that we enter the world. The everyday world of our most immediate relations, but the way we interact with everyone and everything. We now have a framework. So in all the interchanges of life, all the communications in life, all the decision-making in life, all the choices and making in life, I personally have a context in which to act and to speak. And even more deeply, in the unseen, how to think, right? So we might say that these are values, right? And these are values that we want to live by. So when we enter the world, whatever it is, we are coming from a value place. And it's not just about me. I value it for everyone, right? I place value on all life. Because if I place value on my life and my children's life and my grandchildren's life and my parents' life and my friend's life and my colleague's life, well, everybody is somebody's child. All people have children and have parents. All people have people they care about. How can I just value me? How can I have a value system that's only about me? How do I not recognize everybody's desire to be happy, to have their needs met, to have their children live in safety? Right? We all understand that. So the what begins as a personal set of values also becomes a set of universal values. Right? Another way to look at it, if we would say, how do I want to be treated? How do I want the world to treat me? Kindness, understanding. We would love if everyone wanted only good things for us, right? I mean, that's what we'd love the world to offer us. So obviously, this is what we need to want to offer to the world, the whole world. All Americans, all North Americans, all people in the Western Hemisphere, all people in the other hemispheres, I mean everywhere, all animals, all plants, right? All the same. When they pull up the fish, what does the fish do? It fights. It wants to live. Right? Just like us, just like our children. Right? Do not kill, protect all life. Are we first willing in our own personal life to lead a life of value? Not just publicly, but in the hidden part of our life, at home, in our consumption patterns, in the way we relate. What we do, how we use our time. Are we willing to hold ourselves accountable for leading a value-based life? Right? So that's kind of where we begin. And we have to begin with, Where do I want? I know where I want to go in my life. I know, how I want to be in my relationships, my family, my community, you know. But now, you know, when you get to elections, politics, we're talking about what? The world. Right? Right? Now, this is big. This other is very personal, and it's, you know, it's with the people we see. But now it's like, well, now I'm entering the realm of the world, other people. You know, what kind of world do I want? You see, that's big picture. You know, if you don't have that big picture, if you don't have that sense of where you want this journey to go, then it's very easily to get, what? Pulled off course. To be swayed, to listen to somebody else. Oh no, can't get there. Oh no, this is better. You know. So if we haven't asked ourselves, what is the world? You know, what is my vision for the world? It's big picture. It's like, you know, it's what is my? In Buddhism, we say, if you follow the bodhisattva path, you say, I want to, you know, my intention is to be a bodhisattva. I want to be someone who lives in the world in an awakened way and is devoted to benefiting and helping sentient beings ease their suffering. Right? There it is. It's kind of been the human goal for practitioners of this way for thousands of years. This is what the thrust of my life is about. Personal, right? Well, what's our goal, aspiration for the world? How many of us have that? What kind of world do we want? How do we want people to treat each other? How do we want people to be treated? Right. All people. You see, they're trying to, you know, the political process, the media process, it does what? It divides it up and puts labels on people. Right? Try going to war without an enemy. Right? Very difficult. Right? So first you got to have the label enemy, and then you got to slap it on somebody. Then it's easier. Right? And then, of course, you forget that, you know, the enemy of 10 years ago is now the friend, and the friend is now the enemy, and, you know, we, right? In the same way we do this in our personal life. We have to have enemies. So we put labels on them. So we have lots of labels, Republicans, Democrats, left, right, red, blue, right, good, bad, right, black, white, red, you see? We're endlessly dividing and not seeing the common humanity that's behind all those labels. You know, the common humanity of everyone. But if we label, you know, vision, separation, judgment, even hatred. But it's all a process. It's a slippery slope. You see, once you start attributing inhuman things to the other, once you create the other, and you attribute all these negative qualities for them, then it's very easy to take away their humanity. As Thich Nhat Hanh wrote in his famous poem from the Vietnam War, he said, thinking they're killing, of course it was a civil war, remember? He said, thinking they're killing their enemy, they kill their brother. When we put the label on somebody and we call them the enemy, we don't see their common humanity with us. We don't see their suffering. We don't see their confusion. We don't see their anger. We don't see their fear. And we don't see that they're just like us in a certain way. You know, they love their children. They want their children to be happy. They want the children to be safe. Okay. You know, so we're in this boat. and there are all these different factions strategizing. Thich Nhat Hanh said, when everybody's losing their, he's talking about the boat people, so when everybody's losing their head in the boat, there's got to be one person who doesn't. There's got to be one person who sees through the confusion, through the anger, through the fear, and stays grounded, stays clear, because that person can be a source of nourishment and transformation for all these others. Very difficult these days, right? It's all about who, what? Who are you going to vote for? Right? You know, you got to make a choice, don't you? No one talks about values. No one talks about meaning. No one talks about direction. No one talks about big picture. I wanted to read a little bit from a Thich Nhat Hanh. Everybody knows Thich Nhat Hanh. And then we can talk about it a little bit, because I think it presents a view of how to transform the world and heal the world that is not being offered to us. You know, voting is very interesting, right? You know, there's all this stuff going around, right? All this emotion and all this endless talking. But, you know, then you get your ballot, and it's just like, check. I mean, that's all it is. It's kind of interesting. You know, it's just to take the black pen and you make a little mark, and that's all it is. I'm not saying that it doesn't have, you know, effects, but I'm saying it's just kind of interesting, you know. Is this the way the world changes? Is how transformation occurs? Check. What's missing in that? You see? What's missing in that? Why is it that people say the more things change, the more they stay the same? You know, what's fundamentally wrong with check, check, vote, 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 and yet fundamentally things stay the same? On the big issues of life. So it behooves us, those who practice what is called engaged Buddhism, a Buddhism that's engaged in the world, that doesn't just seek our own personal healing and transformation and happiness, but seeks the healing and transformation of the world, to look deeply at these issues. So I'm reading here. This is one of the earlier books of Thich Nhat Hanh called Zen Keys. A very interesting book. And in his last chapter, the book is primarily about Zen, and a lot about Vietnamese Zen and koans and all these things. But the last section is called The Regeneration of Humanity. And I just want to share a little bit with you. He says, the problem that faces us is the problem of awakening. Has anybody heard any of the presidential contenders saying that that's the problem that is facing us? The problem that faces us is the problem of awakening. What we lack is not an ideology or a doctrine that will save the world. See, that's very different, isn't it? We think it's all about ideology and doctrine. What we lack is mindfulness of what we are and of what our real situation is. Before we come up with a new ideology, a new platform, a new, you know, do we stop both as individuals and collectively, and say, are we really aware of who I am? And of what my situation and our situation in life really is. We call that mindfulness, concentration, and deep looking. What is a human being? Who are we? Do we suffer? Why do we suffer? What causes our suffering? Is there another way out of our suffering? Our personal suffering and our collective suffering. Because there is no suffering going on in this world that is not being perpetrated by human beings. I'm talking about in terms of the suffering of the human being. It's human beings. And why do human beings perpetuate suffering on each other and on the world and on the planet and on other species? Because why? Because they are not deeply in touch with who they are. And they have not looked deeply in their situation. When we do that, we see what we're doing. But we don't see what we're doing. What we lack is mindfulness of what we are and of what our situation really is. We need to wake up in order to rediscover our human sovereignty. We are riding a horse that is running out of control. The way of salvation, please pay attention, the way of salvation is not electing Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton. And I'm not saying you're not going to make your choice, but he's saying the way of salvation is a new culture in which human beings are encouraged to rediscover their deepest nature. The way of salvation is a new culture. Right? We have a culture in America that is what? That nurtures what? Culture is nurturing. What does our culture, our mass culture, nurture within the beings of America? What is it nurturing? Self-centeredness, individualism, competition, consumerism. Right? What else? Right? Mindless entertainment. Mindless stimulation. Right? What is our culture, our popular culture? Culture is what human beings create, and then it comes back to, the environment affects us. What seeds within the human mind is our culture nurturing? Right? That's very important. See, no one's talking about our culture, our consumerist culture, our me culture. Nobody's talking about how people are spending their time, how our young people are spending their time, what they're consuming on their instruments, in their movies, the violence, the sexual, you know what I mean? No one's talking about that, the mindlessness of so much of it. When people are not awake to themselves and the situation around them in a very real, direct, it is very easy to what? To lead them around, right? Because they're already confused. They don't see clearly. So the practices of mindfulness and concentration are not just meditative disciplines, for those spiritually bent. In our day and age, they are necessary. Because the forces of culture, right, are so powerful. Right? They used to say, what was that thing they used to say? If a butterfly flutters its wings in the Amazon, it affects the weather. And that was going around a number of years ago, right? But it's not like that anymore. You see, it's like, what if that butterfly was hooked up to these very loud speakers that were playing all around the world, all of a sudden it wouldn't just be a little butterfly fluttering somewhere in the Amazon. It would be much bigger. It would have a much bigger effect, right? So it's not as if people didn't always say things. But these days, through the media, through all these various ways, people, you know, messages are distorted. And if we don't have some way, some internal ground, some internal awareness, right, how do you resist the messages to consume? More, 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 more. More things, more money, bigger this, bigger that. The way of salvation is not a new culture in which human beings are encouraged to rediscover their deepest nature. He says, our picture of an enlightened person is of someone very free, who possesses spiritual strength and is not pushed around by the currents of society. Now, when he says enlightened person, don't think enlightened Buddha master. Think of yourselves. An enlightened person is someone who's free and possesses their own spiritual strength, so they're not pushed around by the currents of society. Right? We come out of the fog. We come out of this cacophony of noise and competing and the anger and the toxicity of our modern culture, which is also part of our political culture, right? So we're not pushed around by that. So we hold our ground, right? So we sit quietly and deeply, and we can investigate what's really going on, not what they tell us is going on, not what they want us to be consumed and obsessed about. If you're obsessed about political situations, this happens, that happens, it's because how do you get obsessed? Because the messages have been, right? There's a process here. And if we don't know that we are actively participating in them, and that we don't have to. We don't have to. The practitioner, once enlightened, sees herself in her true nature, knows herself, and possesses a clear view of reality, the reality of her being and of the social situation. This vision is the most precious fruit Zen can offer. The enlightened person's way of being is the most fundamental and beneficent contribution to society and all life that she can make. Zen is a living tradition that produces stable, healthy, and balanced people. If we want a stable, healthy, and balanced world, maybe we need to think about, how do you create stable, healthy, balanced human beings? Right? There is society, and then there is the individual. But society is made up of individuals. Right? And we know, changing the environment without changing the person doesn't work. Right? You know, the older people here remember the 60s and the Civil Rights Revolution, right? Remember that? Which did many wonderful things. Did it put an end to racism? No. We thought, oh, Voting Rights Act, Civil Rights, no more segregation, on to the next. Never looked at the human beings. Right? 8 years ago, we elected our first black president. For those people who thought that was wonderful, they woke up the next day going, what? What? What a great step for our country. You see, what? No more racism. And here we are 8 years later. Why is that? And why that same morning that many people woke up and said, a new day in America, that many people saw that same day as a tragedy for America. We have to acknowledge that. Those people are in the boat too. Whose boat? Our boat. We have to acknowledge that. Zen is a living tradition that produces stable, healthy, and balanced people. The arts and thought that have their source in the enlightenment of Zen also possesses vitality and clear-sighted serenity. Well, I'm interested in talking with you about this. Let's see, a few other things. The point of departure for new civilization must be our determination not to be colonized by material goods or to contribute to the system of producing and consuming. Those determined to struggle against the treadmill of producing and consuming and for the recovery of human nature must be regarded as the avant-garde of our generation. Many people who live in abundance have revolted against materialism. And then he puts in italics, for the need to be a human being. This is not a new view. It is one of the fundamental human needs stifled by superficial accumulation. This need to be a human being is our greatest hope, the element that can give birth to a new civilization. Right? Oh, is this what fundamentally we should be up to? How do I and how do I help others regain their fundamental humanity? To know themselves as a human being in a world of other human beings with openness and intelligence and caring, right? How do we do that? Do we want to do that? See, this other way is so much easier, isn't it? You just turn on the computer and you just watch the news and blah, 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 and you switch from this side to that side and you talk to your friends and you get a lot of toxicity going, you know? And then you vote. And I'm not saying that voting doesn't make a difference, and you know what I mean? I'm not saying any of that. But it doesn't make a fundamental difference. Right? And people of spirit want to make a fundamental difference. Right? They want to make a fundamental difference personally. They want to change fundamentally. So they really develop the best of what it means to be a human being. And when they enter the world, they want to do that in the same way. And that you cannot legislate, and that you cannot take a pill for. That takes what we do here. It takes a willingness to stop and be present to ourselves as we are and unpack it and heal and transform it. As Thay says, and become a human being. And then he ends that chapter by saying, technological civilization continually creates new needs of consumption, most of which are not important. Right? Is there a new iPhone out? A new Galaxy out? A new HD TV out? A new kind of car? I mean, right? Are these the fundamental issues of humanity and the world? Are they? What's the truth? I mean, what are the fundamental issues that we face in our society? Hunger for many. War, violence, poverty.
Bias.
Sustainability, how about sustainability of our planet? Right? Aren't these the fundamental issues? And yet we are consumed with the idea that the latest iPhone is the most important thing going on here today. Right? Now, how do we get in this situation? Well, it's because we're tied into this culture where things are most important, not humanity. Right? And if we don't find a way to kind of come back into our humanity and to be clear about who we are and what's going on, how can we act in an intelligent and skillful and positive way in the world? So he says, technological civilization continually creates new needs of consumption, most of which are not important. This civilization has also created sufferings and tragedies. Religions must be conscious of our need to awaken to our true humanity. Churches must work to rebuild communities in which a sane and healthy life can be lived, realizing that true happiness does not rest in the consumption of goods paid for by suffering, famine, and death, but in a life enlightened by the insight into interbeing, our connection with each other and all life, and the recognition of our deep responsibility to be true to ourselves and to help our neighbors. I mean, isn't that beautiful? A sane and healthy life can be lived. True happiness does not rest in consumption of goods paid for by the suffering, famine, and death, but it comes from a life enlightened by the insight into interbeing, where we really feel and experience our interconnection with all life. That means being present to life, to when we eat, to when we encounter each other, to when we walk, and to when we see the images of suffering. We don't just go click, click, click. We are present to those images, and it touches something deeply in us. Right? Oh, these are our brothers and sisters on this planet who are suffering. I would hope if that was happening to me that somebody would care. Right? I was hope if that was happening to me, someone would feel interconnection with me. But you have to be present for that. So I didn't make a political endorsement. I leave that to the pundits to make a. Just finally, living in modern society, there's another quote from Thich Nhat Hanh. Living in modern society, one often feels that one cannot easily regain integrity and wholeness. One feels that one has been robbed of one's humaneness, the capacity to truly be oneself. And then he goes on to talk about how to resist this. Resist this. And he says, the purpose of resistance here is to seek the healing of yourself in order to be able to see clearly. So it's not a political resistance. It's very personal resistance. The resistance here is to seek the healing of yourself in order to be able to see clearly. And then he says, and I hope for those of you who are involved in this community, listen to what he's saying. He says, and this is things he wrote back in the 60s. I look for communities of resistance, beautiful, healing, refreshing, both in surroundings and in substance. In such communities, you meet people who symbolize a kind of freshness. Their look, their smile, their understanding should be able to help. I think communities of resistance should be places where people can return to themselves more easily, where the conditions are such that they can heal themselves and recover their wholeness. Okay? So I think that's a beautiful definition of what I hope that we're about here. We offer all these practices and blah, 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 you know. But it's essentially, and again, I mean, hopefully places like the Florida Community Mindfulness, you know, at some point in the future, they'll be on every block. Places where people can come. Places where there's beauty and harmony. Where they can come for respite. Where they can come. Where they can heal their wounds. Right? Where they can refresh and nourish themselves. And where they can learn a way to see clearly a path to a better life for themselves, their families, and the world. Is that clear? That's what we should be up to here. You know, we're not propagating Buddhism. We're not propagating mindfulness. These are just things that we use so we can help nourish and awaken each other. Is that clear? We have a few minutes. Any questions or comments? I mean, who knows? Yes.
Just a comment. When I was living in India, one of the things that stopped me was that I'm asking someone to vote. It's not part of what you're allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
It goes right along with everything you can talk about, and that's not really that important.
Yeah, so Lee was pointing out that when she traveled in India and would visit monasteries, that monks weren't allowed to vote. Now again, whether that's good or not, and whether the modern day it is, we don't need to get into, but it's interesting. You know, going back to the time of the Buddha, 2,600 years ago, he founded a different community. I mean, he basically physically left the culture of his time. And he created a new culture, right? Of wanderers, of people who didn't have lots of possession, who really lived in simplicity, and yet were reliant, because they didn't have anything of their own, they were totally reliant on the lay community to give them food and shelter. You know what I mean? It was interesting. It was a real act of faith, so to speak. And in that early monastic itinerant community that he founded, he developed all kinds of ways of interaction that were about how do you create a healthy community? How do you deal with conflict? How do you create a spiritual community where people live by values? I mean, he really wanted to create another way of being. And he was hoping that by doing that, it would be an inspiration to the wider community to show them there is another way. And that the monastic community would hold those deeper values. But these are different times. And in our culture, we are not, you know, there are not, you know, monasteries every other block. So it is up to us to create these kinds of alternative cultures, places. Yeah. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Charner.
Since we're lay people,
mm-hmm.
we do get to vote.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
Well, we have flawed candidates.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have to use our values and choose the one that we think is going to be more closely aligned. I don't think we go right now.
Well, again, Charna just is saying we have an election, and even though we have flawed candidates, we should vote and not walk away. I think that's a personal choice. Okay? I think that's a personal choice. We do live in a democracy. You know, it's funny. You know, our democracy, for those of you who know history, it started out in an agrarian society. Right? A very, very different society than ours. And the people who voted then and were allowed to vote were who? What?
Men.
White men who own property. I mean that's what democracy looked like. So we are in a great experiment here, right? This thing called democracy. You know, when we are no longer an agricultural based world of white men with property, you know, how do you run? How do you have a democracy where everyone has the say if people are not that educated to the values of democracy? You know, very interesting. I mean, there are deep questions here. I mean, I'm not going to get into it, but it's, we have to look deeply into what we're doing. Yeah, I'm not saying don't vote and that, but I'm saying, even if you vote, understand, it is not going to be a new day in America the day after. For those of us old enough for those new days, we have realized what? No. Variations on themes. Right? And that's the truth. Right? We still have war. We still have violence. We still have, the culture we have. I mean, nothing's fundamentally changing. I think, again, the culture and the media and the people who are very invested in this process are trying to tell us what? This is the only way. And Charner, you need to make a choice, right? Well, that could be true. But, remember our wonderful teacher Thich Nhat Hanh, right? In Vietnam, two opposing sides, right? Pro-communist, pro-West, civil war, right? And in the middle were the Buddhists who stood for values, who didn't take sides, but yet were very active in putting forward their own program based on ending suffering, ending violence, communication, dialogue. It's not about winning and losing. Power over, there is another way. I think it's important that we acknowledge that. There are other ways. And again, to be able to hold your ground, right? If you're in that proverbial movie theater and somebody yells fire, before you start running, check and see if there's really smoke. It could just be somebody yelling fire. Everybody's panicking. We are still the slaves of our own minds. Right? Our minds tell us this thought and that thought and get angry at this one, and then half an hour later to really love this one and to like this one and then don't like this one. I mean, we can't even deal with our own minds and the messages it's giving us. We don't see clearly whether they're accurate messages or how they're distorting, If we can't see clearly our own minds and the validity of our own thoughts, and see the consequences of our own actions. How do we make decisions for the whole world? Not easy. So I think this is a good counterweight. Thich Nhat Hanh is famous for he's famous for many things, but when you first heard the American don't just stand there, do something. Everybody know that one? Maybe when you were growing up, don't just stand there, do something. He said when he heard that, he thought, don't just do something, stand there. sometimes when everybody's telling us you got to go do something, we need to just stand here, sit here, look deeply into what's going on. So we'll end for today. Thank you.